Your On the Mark podcast is loading now. The On the Mark podcast is sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company, family-owned dealership since 1915, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. News Radio 1070 WKOK presents On the Mark. It's a chance to voice your opinion on the events that affect life in the Susquehanna Valley. Call 1-800-795-9565 or email onthemark@wkok.com. Now, here are your hosts for On the Mark, Mark Lawrence and Ben Reichle.
Greetings and welcome on board the WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show, On the Mark. I'm Mark Lawrence. Ben Reichle is here, local Republican committee person, businessman, and he's an American first, right?
A co-host today.
Right, a co-host. That's his big job today, so we appreciate him coming in. Next week, we're going to be joined by Taylor Lightman's coming back, our good student who's been studying in Sweden, ultra-liberal, super free thinker, and he'll be back in the studio to try to tell me that I'm wrong. So, you know we're liberal.
I guess we'll get the discussion about, doesn't Joe tell you that every day?
No, but he employs many callers who call in. I had this caller this week who said that. We get quite a few callers that have this particular message here. Free naloxone at state health centers. Your view on that, State Senator Gene Yaw?
I think it's a good idea to get more naloxone out. It's a life-saving drug.
But then we had this. I thought free naloxone was a good idea, but...
Number one, Mark, I think you're wrong. You're off your rocker. Your morals, Christianity, I just think you've been corrupted. You really have lost my faith in you as the host of this show as of today.
He made the promo real because he feels so strongly.
Did you ask him how he really felt?
You can chime in if you want to on this. This is idle chit-chat.
Is that somewhat violence that caller was doing
violence
towards Mark?
I don't think we got quite to that point.
All right. Well, we do have a guest, so let's expedite this so we don't waste any more of his time than we already have. On the Mark, sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company. Check them out at sunburymotors.com. Our hometown pharmacy's toll-free line is open. Call us 1-800-795-9565. That's 1-800-795-9565. You can email us at onthemark@wdkok.com or text us at 70236. We'll have lots more to say about our sponsors and our hometown pharmacies and our Text Connect system as the show progresses. But we want to introduce our VIP guest this morning. Jeffrey Mann is here. He's an associate professor of religious studies at Susquehanna University. Of course, I know him as a good Lutheran. He's a member of Zion Lutheran Church in Sunbury, so I have seen him there. Now, I haven't been there in quite a while, but I'm sure he's somewhere in the back row with his family. Educated Vanderbilt University, Concordia Theological Seminary, and Kenyon College. Kenyon College, am I saying that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Where is that?
That's in Central Ohio.
Oh, okay.
Small liberal arts college.
So, and he's the smartest guy in the room everywhere he goes. He's been kind enough at Zion to teach Sunday school classes, but he has a vitae that's, my printer warned me before I hit print, saying, you know, this is about 20 pages long. So I appreciate that. Has been around the world, studied in Japan or taught in Japan?
Taught in Japan at Senshu University for a couple of semesters.
Okay, so real theological, religious, and philosophical giant with us today. And I think you're a super person, too, having known you for probably 10 years or so. So I really appreciate you coming in. All right, you wrote a book, May We Kill, To Be Violent or Not Violent. Can you encapsulate this debate as to whether or not we should be violent?
Well, this has been an issue both in the East and the West for a long time in terms of the moral responsibility of citizens, the moral responsibility of nations. There are always questions about when one might go to war between nations, when an individual might use violence to protect him or herself or to protect other people. And there have been those who say that there are times and conditions when violence can be justified, and there have been others who say, no, violence can never be justified.
Well, who says violence can never be justified? Some sort of a true pacifist?
Yeah, we have some traditions in Christianity dating back to the early church of people that condemned violence entirely, and these have developed. They got started again in the 16th century with the Anabaptists, and our Mennonite and Amish communities that we know are part of this pacifist tradition. Quakers are part of this pacifist tradition. So there are Christian denominations that are pacifist today. And in the East, we have quite a number of traditions, Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, where the moral ideal is nonviolence. Gandhi taught nonviolence. The Buddha taught nonviolence. And so you do have a significant number of people saying, no, violence is never to be justified.
Well, and occasionally you see Buddhists. You wrote a book.
I did.
About when Buddhists are violent. You also talk about the fact that this folks who say that Jesus was completely nonviolent might be exaggerating. Is that a fair way to word it?
I don't know if exaggerating would be the right word. Maybe it is. But there's a lot of folks that I come across who just assume that, yes, Jesus taught nonviolence, that Jesus was a pacifist and he wanted all of his followers to be nonviolence, to be nonviolent. And you know, looking at the evidence, looking at the arguments, I just, with all due respect, believe they're wrong. I think they've misunderstood what Jesus was about.
You saw nonviolent remarks under certain circumstances.
Oh, right? Absolutely. And certainly Jesus modeled himself a life of nonviolence. He was in situations where he, you know, may have had the opportunity to use violence and chose not to. However, there's a difference between a person saying, I am not going to use violence, or I'm not going to use violence in this situation, and violence is always wrong.
And you also say that there's, I forget how you word it, but something about the fact that you shouldn't use a situational remark from 2,000 years ago for your moral dilemmas today. Now, of course, that's a terrible quote, but...
Well, I think, you know, for Christians who regard Jesus as the Son of God and his moral teachings as absolute, then, yeah, sure, I mean, what is said 2,000 years ago or even, you know, longer before that when you look at the Old Testament prophets can be absolute. And it's a divine command, right? We're all bound to abide by that if that's our tradition. However, we have to make sure we understood that command correctly. There's a lot of times that people look at moral commands in the scriptures and they think they know what they mean, and sometimes they've been misled by lousy translations or not understanding the full context of the situation.
May I Kill is the name of the book. Didn't take me long to need a correction here. Professor Jeffrey Mann is with us talking about when violence is justified. So we are going to have a violence conversation now about just soldiers or ourselves or police. Sort of where do you go in the book with all of that?
Well, I try to be fairly comprehensive in terms of looking at moral issues, the moral issues of violence that can intersect nations going to war against nations, right? The things that political leaders have to consider, but also we as responsible citizens need to consider. So if our if a president is saying we should go to war with country X, or we should engage in military actions against country Y, and we as informed citizens want to express our support or express our disapproval, we should be making sure that we're well informed about the ethics of when we consider violence to be justified. What is, if we're just war theorists, well, does this meet the requirement of just war, and should I support this action that my country is doing, or should I speak out against it?
And breaking down, you know, reading your notes, Jeff, and we were talking here a little bit earlier, but breaking down the pure basics, I sort of propose this question: is violence in mankind's DNA, and nonviolence needs to be learned? I mean, the DNA needs to be diluted a bit.
That's a really interesting question. And so I think what I would say is, as I've spent the last few years learning more about this, I do think that there is sort of a hardwiring into our DNA towards tribalism. Right, and it doesn't matter if that tribalism is ethnicity or religion or national, we human beings have this penchant for violently opposing people who stand in the way, especially members of other groups. So I think to a certain degree, yeah, we're hardwired for this type of tribalism, which can get us in an awful lot of trouble, and so we need to, I think, overcome that tendency. But by the same token, one of the things that did surprise me over the years of working on this is that normal functioning humans, right, the most of us, we really don't want to engage in violence. We seem to be programmed to want to shun that sort of violence. And so one of the more interesting books that I read was a book by a guy named Grossman, a book called On Killing. And the book is controversial, and some people question some of his findings. But what he found is that so very often in warfare, soldiers don't want to shoot at each other. They would start shooting over the heads of their enemies, they would find things to do other than engage the enemy, going and supporting other soldiers or putting down their rifle to attend to someone who needed medical attention, even if that person was already receiving medical attention. So there does seem to be this strong resistance to actually engaging in brutal violence against another person, to look someone in the eye and kill them. And another thing that I found is people who have done that, whether in law enforcement or in the military, who have done that and maybe they may have ethically come to terms with what they've done and believe that it was ethically correct, but man, that can mess with your head. So that's a really interesting question. I'm not sure exactly how I want to respond to it. I guess I would say on one hand, yeah, we're programmed to be tribalistic and take down our enemies in a sense. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, we don't really want to engage in that brutal violence.
Taking a little bit step farther, is there a gender and race component in this also?
Not that I've come across.
Okay.
I would expect that when it comes to gender, since males skew a bit more towards the aggressive than females, that you're going to find some correlation. But that skewing towards aggression is not, you know, absolute. That's not it's significant, but it's not overwhelming. So I think you'd find some difference, but nothing too phenomenal.
But cultures and certain races might be more violent in their survival or more passive in their survival in certain areas around the world?
Yeah, that's another good question. I would say that if you live in a society where you encounter violence on a more regular basis, unlike most of American society today, unlike living here in Snyder County, if you don't encounter an awful lot of it, a little bit of it can be shocking. But if you grow up in a community where there's warfare, there's literal warfare, and you've seen people killed, or you live in a really crime-ridden area, then I think we humans can become comfortable, but familiar with it, and it can be less shocking and probably easier to engage in myself if I live in a community where I've encountered a lot more of that.
So it would be, if I went to a bar and saw two guys punch each other, which I have done 20 years ago, but not lately. I probably haven't seen guys fist fighting in 20 years or more. I don't go to the right bars, I guess. Sorry, man. But anyway.
No, I don't either. But
but anyway, so I would be more reactive to see it today. You know, it would be more of an anomaly to see that today. So that's what we're talking about, violence one-on-one. But we're also sort of talking about corporate violence. Do we appreciate our country going to war? So that's the levels. And I want to tell you something, Jeff. I mentioned this off mic. This book has broad appeal for each individual human in the U.S. or in the world, because it isn't just about philosophy and religion and, you know, when people do things. It is very introspective about how do you feel about what you would do if somebody threatened you. Mm-hmm. What do you think when somebody threatens your country? What do you think about other warring countries? You know, what do you think about that? You used in passing something critically pivotal in the book, I think, just war theory, this idea mm-hmm. that some war is okay and that men are willing to fight it, mm-hmm. that, you know, to stand behind or stand in front of leaders and fight it. Elaborate on that, please.
So what's called just war theory has most of its origins in the Christian tradition, although its roots date back to the Greeks. And what developed was a theory that there are wars that are just. There are wars that are acceptable to fight. Not everyone accepts this, but it has been the dominant position within Christianity. You find something very similar in Islam and Judaism and other traditions around the world. And so there are requirements. There are requirements that have to be met before a nation can go to war. And then there are requirements within that war about how violence can be used, what types of violence are acceptable and what types of violence are not acceptable. And so there's different versions of just war theory. It's changed over the centuries, but there's an underlying There's an underlying ethical model there, which I think is very useful for analyzing nations making these decisions. And then what I do in the book after that, which I think is unique, is that I take that model of just war theory, which is pretty familiar to a large number of people, and I apply it to civilian self-defense. So if you're that bar you were mentioning earlier, and you're watching those two guys, but then things spill over and someone's threatening you, right? And so you're wondering, is it okay to use violence? If so, what kind of violence is acceptable? And so I take just war theory and apply it to that context of civilian self-defense, so that individuals can think through for themselves, all right, when is it acceptable for me personally if I were to encounter a potentially violent situation? When is it acceptable for me to use violence? And again, if it is acceptable, what type, what level of violence can I engage in?
It is not acceptable for me, and I'm taking Ben with me.
Yeah, he's kind of a big guy.
He's my bodyguard. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. We invite folks to call us now. 1-800-795-9565 is the Hometown Pharmacy's toll-free line. That is 1-800-795-9565. That's the Hometown Pharmacy's toll-free line, sponsored by the Shade Mountain Pharmacy in Mount Pleasant Mills, the Norrie Pharmacy, Danville Pharmacy, Lewisburg Pharmacy, the Bloomsburg Medicine Shop, and Trutz Pharmacy in Mifflinburg. Our umbrella sponsor always, the Sunbury Motor Company.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Welcome back to WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show. On the mark, Mark Lawrence here. Mr. Joe McGranahan always has the Friday off so he can extend his retirement length in the weekend. And Ben Reichle is our usual co-host, so we appreciate him coming in. We have a great guest today. Jeffrey K. Mann is here. Jeff Mann, as I know him, he's an associate professor of religious studies at Susquehanna University. His new book examines how, when, and if violence is justified. Soldiers and police officers make this big decision every day, and so do their leaders, and so do we. So we can talk about that. Yeah, let's elaborate on that. When violence is justified for self-defense, does everybody have their own sort of personal checklist that they go through before they try to justify their own violence?
Well, I suppose most people just react, right? Most people aren't going to go through an ethical checklist. Most people just react to situations. And so I think that's one reason why it's important to, you know, go through your own moral reasoning beforehand, right? So that you don't end up just reacting and getting yourself in an awful lot of trouble, whether it be legal or moral. Thinking through your ethics beforehand helps you make good decisions in the moment.
Okay. So this is sort of I'm thinking of it as a checklist, but it might not be that. But different people have different thresholds, different levels. Different people can be pushed farther and farther and not become violent in self-defense.
Yeah, I mean, there are certainly people who have a remarkable amount of patience, and then there are people who have a chip on their shoulder. But I'm not sure that, I mean, if we're looking at the ethics of when is it acceptable to respond to violence, legally and morally, there the standard is kind of fixed. It's not based on your personal psychology. And so people get themselves in an awful lot of trouble if they've got a chip on their shoulder, if they've got a temper. And so one of the things I talk about in the book is trying to cultivate within yourself, you know, patience to deal with your pride. A lot of people end up engaging in unnecessary violence because of pride. You know, when you talk about those bar fights, you got a couple of guys who are bumping chests and pushing each other and engaging in this sort of monkey dance, and neither one wants to back down, even though the stakes are minimal. The issue is ridiculous, but there's so much pride involved that they don't they can get themselves involved in violence when it's completely unnecessary.
The question I would like to have you think about from the standpoint of just reading part of the excerpts of your book was, does strength deter violence?
I believe it does, sure. I mean, you guys will remember during the Cold War that there is T-shirts and signs that say, you know, peace through superior firepower, right? And the whole concept of, you know, mutual assured destruction.
Well, I just said I'm taking Ben to the bar with me. It's the same thing. It makes me stronger
we'll
to have...
We'll get Kevin her.
Okay, well, I need somebody.
Kevin's the bouncer.
I need somebody.
But if a person looks strong, somebody's not going to mess with them. If somebody has, I go back to go back and watch Gunsmoke or Bonanza. Now, of course, those are just TV shows. But if I didn't have a gun and you had a gun, you had the protocol not to shoot. There was rules, you know, honor among thieves or you know, things like that. But if somebody, you know, we talk about countries being stronger, but just people. Mm-hmm. If somebody exudes strength, usually they don't get messed with.
Yeah, I mean, that can certainly play out, but I draw a distinction between social violence and asocial violence, right? So social violence is like the two guys at the bar in their monkey dance, right, who are trying to show off for their friends or their girlfriends, and there's rules involved there, right? There's social rules. In that sort of situation, you know, you don't pull a weapon. You don't shoot someone when the stakes were, you know, you spilled my beer. And so in social violence, certainly a show of strength can diffuse a situation, but by the same token, sometimes people want to take down the big guy, right? And so sometimes if you are the big guy, that people would love to be the guy who, you know, if you want bragging rights the next day about the fight that you got in at the bar, you don't want to take down the little guy. You want to take down the big guy. So there are times at which being strong can actually be a liability, right? Because that can come into play. But when we look at asocial violence, right, when you're talking about predatory violence, in that situation, if you have someone who is trying to prey on someone in order to attain their money or their resources or, you know, to physically dominate them, then strength is going to be a much more of a deterrent. In predatory violence, you want an easy conquest. And so it's not going to be two people facing each other and engaging one another and let's go. It's going to be a situation where someone's going to just try to take down the easiest prey. We were talking earlier about, you know, our hardwiring, our DNA. You know, the lion isn't going after the strongest, fastest antelope. He or she. Well, I guess it's mostly the females who do the hunting, right? She's going to go after the weaker one.
Road rage.
I think road rage comes into a lot about pride and personal psychology. I mean, I've yelled at a few people. Mm. And there's a story in the book. There might be two stories in the book about road rage leading to situations that were almost violent. One right here in Sealands Grove. But yeah, a lot of times it's a type of social violence that sometimes spills over into to just complete ridiculous nastiness.
I've seen it. I've seen people on the roads, and when you've been around that, you have a tendency to back off and watch two vehicles sort of go. But I've seen the as I say in Pittsburgh, the South Side salute being given to everybody, and I had to explain to my daughter one time that I think that guy in that car thinks that guy's number one. But I mean, it is violence that just, it's like a volcanic reaction almost, just blows up.
Yeah, and if you know yourself, right, if you know your buttons, if you know what sets you off, you can do a little bit better job of dealing with it, of recognizing it, and catching yourself a little earlier. And so, you know, in this final section on self-cultivation, I talk about the importance of knowing yourself. If there's something that sets you off, knowing it is going to be the first step in terms of dealing with it more effectively and being able to catch yourself before it puts you in some horrible situation that you didn't plan because someone, you know,
I think you said something earlier about the people who have actually killed somebody and how they come to it personally. Mm-hmm. So, in a way, you've researched this and you've looked at it. So in some ways, people don't really want to kill, but they've been put in situations for their lives or mm-hmm. for others that they had to kill. Then how they cope with that mm-hmm. is an ongoing scenario for their life.
Right. Well, I've come across, you know, in reading and talking to military personnel, I've come across those who hadn't really come to grips with their own ethics of violence. They volunteered for military service. They may have gone and fought and personally engaged in combat operations, and hadn't really worked through their ethics. There was a really interesting article in USA Today a number of years ago that dealt with this. A Marine captain who wrote an article entitled "I Killed People in Afghanistan: Was I Right or Wrong?" And it's a very compelling article. But he hadn't really worked through his ethics. And so afterwards, he's asking himself these questions over and over. Was this right? Was this justified? And I thought, you know, I certainly respect that man's service to our country, and I respect the fact that he's a morally serious individual. But I kept thinking, you know, if you had worked through these principles beforehand, it would have been a lot easier to deal with.
Well, it has to be tough, because how do you do killed or be killed if
right.
you're in the... Yeah. military and you're in combat.
Mm-hmm. You voluntarily placed yourself in that situation where you're a guest, an unwanted guest, right? You know, mm-hmm. you volunteered to be there. They'd much assume.
Ticket, we're going to ask Jeff to stay a little bit longer.
Can you stay past 9?
Sure.
Fantastic. Dan, you have to stay past 9 too. Everybody stay past 9. This is WKOK Sunbury.
News Radio 1070 WKOK presents On the Mark. It's a chance to voice your opinion on the events that affect life in the Susquehanna Valley. Call 1-800-795-9565 or email onthemark@wkok.com. Now, here are your hosts for On the Mark, Mark Lawrence and Ben Reichle.
Greetings and welcome back to the WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show, On the Mark, sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company. Check them out at sunburymotors.com. Our hometown pharmacy's toll-free line is open. It is 1-800-795-9565. That is 1-800-795-9565. The toll-free line is sponsored by the Shade Mountain Pharmacy in Mount Pleasant Mills, the Norrie Pharmacy, Danville Pharmacy, Lewisburg Pharmacy, Trutz Pharmacy in Mifflinburg, and the Bloomsburg Medicine Shop. Our hometown pharmacies offer personalized service on a first-name basis. First names like Terry, the owner out at Shade Mountain Pharmacy. He'd love to talk to you on Route 35 in Mount Pleasant Mills. Tyler's out at Trutz Pharmacy on Walnut Street in Mifflinburg. Steve's out at the Norrie Pharmacy on Duke Street in North Helena, which Duke Street's wide open right now. Kathy's at the Danville Pharmacy on Mill Street in Danville. Jennifer's at the Bloomsburg Medicine Shop on Market Street in Bloomsburg. Brad's at the Lewisburg Pharmacy on 2nd Street in Lewisburg. They got one thing in common. They love super service, and they would just love to take good care of you. Some of them got the drug take-back boxes. Some of them got the delivery service going. The bottom line is that they really raise you up and honor you as a customer. They don't treat you like a number. In fact, they don't even have those little number-taking devices where you take the little paper tab, and they don't send your money to China, and they support local businesses, and you can do, and you do yourself a favor if you go to a hometown pharmacy. We have religious studies professor here, associate professor of religious studies at Susquehanna University. Mr. Jeff Mann is here from Susquehanna. His new book, May I Kill, is out. It talks about when and if violence is justified personally and as local citizens, as U.S. citizens. It asks that questions of soldiers and police officers and us. You're welcome to join our conversation. We talked about Jesus not being exceedingly nonviolent, as he certainly talked about a little bit, but maybe you have an observation about that. We have to talk yet about police and get more into the self-cultivation, how your patience, I think, is one of the words that's mentioned there can be extended. So we're going to talk about that. But call us now. Talk to Jeff Mann, 1-800-795-9565. That's 1-800-795-9565. We've got one caller waiting and another one coming in. And May I Kill is at Amazon. Paperback's only 20-some bucks, so it's not up in those academic prices that you see. You know, it's not like $500 like my science book was at Penn State 30 years ago. So it's affordably priced.
Do you even buy used books at Penn State?
If they had them, but okay. The professors would crank out new ones as fast as they could. And so Amazon.com or Kindle, and probably... Are you going to do an Audible version so I can listen to it while I'm mowing the grass and so on?
If you think you want to listen to me for that long, maybe we could talk about it.
I would love, honestly, that's the way I like to listen to books. Not mowing the grass, but through Audible. So, yeah, please, if you're going to do so, pull the trigger, as they say, and go ahead and do that. I'm sorry, I can't resist. 1-800-795-9565. The most patient man in America is Dan from New Berlin. Thank you for waiting. You're on the mark.
I don't know if that's true, if I'm the most patient, but it's a very good program today, Mark. And I enjoyed hearing the Professor Mann have this discussion. My question, Professor, is in the King James Version, the sixth commandment says, "Thou shalt not kill." Okay, let that set as it is, but in a lot of later versions, New American Standard, Berkeley Version, it says, "Thou shalt not murder." And my question has to do with, you know, I had many discussions with people on the difference between killing and murder, and that's my question. I'd like to hear you discuss that. The difference.
Sure. Thanks for your question, Dan. Yeah, that's an issue that comes up a lot, and I think there's a lot of confusion about that. I mentioned earlier in the show that people, you know, who base their personal morals on the teachings of the scriptures want to come to grips with these moral commands. The commandment, it's either the fifth or the sixth, depending on how you number them. There's two different ways to number the Ten Commandments, is sometimes translated into English as "Thou shalt not kill." And if you take it that way, though, you start thinking, wait a minute, there's sort of a problem here, because the Old Testament is full of occasions where God tells people to kill, to go to war, and so, you know, or to use the death penalty in certain cases. And so it actually turns out to be rather simple, that "thou shalt not kill" is just a bad translation. The Hebrew word that's used there is ratzach, and that means murder. The proper translation of that commandment would be, "thou shalt not murder." You should not murder. That is, you should not kill an innocent human being. It's got nothing to do with self-defense. It's got nothing to do with going to war. It's got nothing to do with animals and being a vegetarian. It's really a pretty straightforward condemnation of killing innocent people. And "thou shalt not kill," unfortunately, is just a bad translation.
Does that help, Dan?
Yeah, that helps a lot. And a lot of people don't realize that even Peter carried a sword for self-defense. So, very interesting. Thanks for the great answer, Professor.
Thank you so much. We'll take more comers. 1-800-795-9565 is the telephone number. Professor Jeff Mann wrote the book, May I Kill? We got a caller standing by. Ben, are you standing by?
I was just thinking that, and then where do you, or how do you translate an eye for an eye?
Oh, I mean, when you get to an eye for an eye in the Code of Hammurabi, I mean, what you've got is, there you've got sort of civil laws in terms of punishments for crimes, right? And we look at that today, and this isn't too much the focus of the book, but we look at that today and we're like, okay, so if you commit murder, then you should be executed. And so the punishment has to go up to the level of the crime. But at that time, it was actually functioning the other way. It was a way of limiting responses and eliminating blood feuds. And so if there was, you know, when we talk about an eye for an eye, it's only an eye for an eye, only a tooth for a tooth, rather than these self-perpetuating, spiraling of violence.
So in the cultures, if somebody steals something and they have their hand cut off, that's sort of the eye for the eye analogy?
Well, I mean, so that, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean, the justification of stealing something, you went and you took something, so
right.
Physically we're going to maim you so you don't steal anymore?
Yeah, I think you could make that connection. I don't know if I would, I don't know if that particular punishment comes out of that that particular way of the code of Hammurabi and the eye for an eye. I mean, you could certainly compare them and say that they're comparable, and they're. But I'm not sure there's a direct connection there.
But you can have an argument: the death penalty is appropriate in the case of somebody who's murdered. I mean, you could tie that argument in with that.
What you can certainly say is that the Hebrew Bible or the Old Testament teaches that the death penalty is appropriate for certain crimes like murder. Absolutely.
All right. 1-800-795-9565. Open phones. Professor Mann is here. We would just love to talk to you. Do people call you Professor Mann?
Oh, they call me all sorts of things.
Oh, I'm sure. Okay, gotcha. All right, Joe from Sunbury, you're on the mark.
Good morning, man. I would like to have a brief discussion about the justified war theory that Jeff has mentioned. Nothing I've heard about before, but just his ideas about, in a microcosm of that, like in our country, to address like gang violence and mob violence, which I think a gang may be different than a mob. A gang may have like a permanent, more duration than a mob may be a brief, you know, and then the people disperse and no longer have that connection. But a gang, such as when you have a gang in what I hear, say from L.A., the gangs are like a small society within themselves where the police, you know, patrol the edges, so to speak, and that they don't mix with the other type of society and a mob. But I wonder, the justified war theory and the mob, if Jeff has an idea of how normally a mob and what's associated as like a lynch mob, those people on an individual level would probably never do what they end up doing, but how does that quickly permeate, you know, through that group, you know, that probably may have had that in mind, but not, you know, I just don't think that that's, but if you get my,
how do we get to mob mentality? It would be right. Okay summary.
Yeah, that's an interesting question about when you're getting into the human psychology of violence. I'd say for the most part, I don't deal with that too much, but there is a way in which I do talk about something related to that in the book. And I was saying earlier that most of us don't want to engage in extreme violence, right? Most of us don't want to kill other human beings, even if we don't really like them, even if we've gone to war with them, even if they're the enemy, right? We don't really want to look someone in the eye and kill them. However, there is this, you know, human psychology is a phenomenally complex thing. And there can be situations where we get caught up in the moment. For readers who have, for people who've read Lord of the Flies, which is a wonderful book, there's the, this isn't too much of a spoiler, I hope, but there's the scene where Simon is assaulted by the other kids on the island, and even some nice kids, right, who get in the action. And you look at what people do after sporting events, and we can really get caught up in these situations that can become tremendously dangerous. And so the one place I talk about this in the book is when I'm talking about the difference between social violence and asocial violence. There are times when two guys can be, you know, engaging each other and wanting to fight. And you know that if it's just that sort of social violence, even if you lose, you know, okay, you might have a broken nose or something like that, but you're probably going to be okay. But what can get very dangerous is what's some folks have called a group monkey dance. So the monkey dance is the two guys, you know, puffing up their chests and trying to show off. But if you get what's called a group monkey dance, where a group of people starts targeting one individual, that can become a really dangerous situation, because that normal human reticence for violence seems to get bypassed. And a group can do crazy, violent, awful things that they normally would never do as individuals. And so if you find yourself, you know, on the receiving end of that, that's a tremendously dangerous situation to be in. And so for the most part, you know, I'm all about responding to violent situations as a citizen, as a civilian, with the least amount of violence necessary, if any is necessary. But in situations where what you're talking about is mob violence, or that mob mentality comes into play, I mean, that's a situation where if you want to survive, you may have to use an extreme amount of violence and then run really fast.
Yeah, so even in the mob, you find more like central players in them, mm-hmm. people that are there and kind of going along with it, right? I mean, maybe not everybody in that mob has the same idea, but yet you go along. You don't jump into the middle and say, rarely, I mean, that mm-hmm. this is wrong, let's stop. Because,
right.
no, what happens, you know, our history tells us what happens when, you know, that kind of mentality takes over.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. We got you, Joe. Thank you so much.
Oops. A different note, I wonder how many deaths in the United States are just due to self-defense, like someone breaking into a home. It would probably be a small number if we eliminate gang violence and, you know, revenge violence, things like that. So on that note, I was just curious. I don't have that stat, but I was thinking about it as you talked through this.
The death
Have a
rate,
good day, man.
See, the death rate for people who break into my home is 100%. How about that? I don't know. Anyway, 1-800-795-9565 is our telephone number. Speedy dialers only. One more question. Self-cultivation. It takes you three chapters to dig through the book, but please tell us a lot more about that.
So at the end of the book, after considering the ethics of this and, you know, rationally what might be the right things to do, and people are going to have disagreements about some of these ethical considerations, it seems to me that any good ethical deliberation doesn't end with just the cognitive process of, okay, here is what I think is right and here is what I think is wrong. If we're really interested in being virtuous people, right, if we really want to create more peace in the world, and maybe sometimes violence is necessary to curb dictators and to curb aggressors. But if we're trying to make the world a better place, if we're trying to cultivate peace, then we need to make ourselves better people. And so I finished by talking about how we can look at that in three different components, you know, body, mind, and spirit. And so if I want to make the world a better place and I want to cultivate peace, well, by cultivating my body, right, by developing my my physical health, by developing my capacity to respond with strength to dangerous situations, perhaps, you know, studying martial arts or self-defense or things like that, or even taking courses in the proper use of a handgun for if you're going to concealed carry. You can, if you do this well, if you take it seriously and engage it right, you can make the world a better place by making yourself stronger. We talked about this before, right? If you can make yourself stronger, you can make the world a safer place. And then the mental aspect, right? If we're developing body, mind, and spirit, do you know the best way to resolve conflicts, right? Police officers know that they can't respond to every situation by whipping out a pistol, right? If you want to resolve things as well as you can, you need the mental wherewithal to respond intelligently with strategies that are going to reduce this. And so do you develop within yourself the knowledge of how to defuse violence and how to respond to violence. And then finally, as we talked about before, when it comes to cultivating your spirit, we get ourselves in a lot of trouble and we create a lot of violence because of pride, because of ignorance. And so if I can cultivate myself as a human being to be a better human being, I'm not going to get drawn into situations as easily and contribute to violence or make poor decisions.
All right, Lance, you're going to get the last word. Please go right ahead.
Okay, why? I like to protest about that monkey dance. That was a racist dog whistle, wasn't it?
Oh, gee.
thank you. Is he serious?
No. I'm
just harassing you.
Oh, okay.
I'm just being ridiculous.
He's trying to pick a fight.
Why? Anyway, though, remember about George Patton when someone had got up in his face and they said just what an absolute, how absolutely ridiculous, asinine and stupid that war was, what a waste of blood, treasure, and everything that was holy it was, and what he said. And that was after he agreed with everything the person said, he said, now all we need to do is convince the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would really like to see how this fellow's book and everything, we can start convincing the other side, you know?
All right.
Really great.
Well, we're going to read it, Lance. We're both going to read this, and we're going to talk about this again. We'll bring the professor back, and we'll offer up our conclusions. Thank you, Lance. Thanks for calling in.
Copy of his book for sure. So,
amen. thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been
really,
really a pleasure.
Appreciate it. May I Kill of Animal, available at Amazon.com. And you might want to keep an eye out for the Susquehanna University bookstore. The university bookstores around here sometimes do, sometimes don't. You just never know. You can't go by that. Kindle's available and hopefully Audible in the future. But Jeff Mann, Associate Professor of Religious Studies at Susquehanna University. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Ben.
Very interesting.
We will take a quick break, and we'll be back with probably verbal violence when we return. We'll be arguing shortly.
A special holiday greeting from your local hometown pharmacies.
It's the holiday season in Central PA. Everyone's busy all night and all day, planning for visitors to their hometowns, prepping for parties with New Year's countdowns.
If anyone starts to feel under the weather, we have lots of things to help them feel better. With pharmacists and staff so friendly and quick, a hometown pharmacy can just do the trick.
And boroughs and towns, we're so very close by, near the river and woods. It's not a long drive. There's Bloomsburg, Lewisburg, Northumberland 2, Mifflinburg, Danville, and Mount Pleasant Mills. Ooh.
We love what we do, and we truly do care. When it comes to your health, we're always right there. You can give us a call. Better yet, stop on by. We'll have a nice talk. You can give us a try.
There's nothing quite like a hometown pharmacy where everything's the way it all used to be. Wishing everyone out there good health and good cheer for the holiday season and throughout the year.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year from everyone at your hometown pharmacies.
For the Happy New Year. It sure is cold out tonight. I'm freezing.
Hey, anyone want to come over to my house for some hot chocolate?
Bob, it's definitely warmer out here than it is at your house in the winter.
Not anymore. TD Energy Experts just installed a new single-zone Mitsubishi Hyper-Heat cooling and heating system in our family room addition, so it's not cold in there anymore.
You mean the meat locker? I was just at your house 2 days ago, and it was freezing in your addition.
Dave from TD Energy installed it yesterday. Dave said it should only take 1 day to fully install a single zone unit, and voila, they were there and gone in 1 day.
I hear their commercials all the time on the radio.
So, no more gloves, hats, or jackets needed at my house anymore. In fact, I was just walking around last night in my...
Hey, hold on there, Bob. How about that hot chocolate at your house?
Great idea.
Do you have a cold spot in your home where it just never seems to get warm? Well, give TD Energy Experts a call at 570-258-8088 or visit us on tdenergyexperts.com or like us on Facebook, 570-258-8088.
Well, Professor Mann was kind enough to leave his copy of the book here, so Ben's going to read it next week when he's on vacation. Then we're going to give it to Lance. He's going to read it, and then I'm going to read it. So,
interesting. Yep. Interesting book, interesting concept, and it hits on multiple levels. You talk about body, mind, and spirit, and
personal.
You look at how and why killing happens. But I will say this, in another book I just finished by John Grisham, it was called Sycamore Row. And what's interesting about this book, it goes back to Grisham's first book, A Time to Kill, and has some of the same characters in, a little bit different plot. And, of course, Grisham has 20-some books in between. And this deals with death in a little bit different way. But, again... In Professor Mann's book, the morality, life versus death, laws, we talked about civil laws, religious laws, cultural laws. I mean, you know, it's pretty interesting.
Well, if you use the Old Testament to justify opposing the death penalty, thou shalt not kill, well, one could say it isn't murder if you're executing an individual who's convicted of a crime, that they sort of lost their innocent status when they, you know, committed the crime. So that doesn't stand. I'm still as opposed to the death penalty as I ever was, but that is definitely a good part of the discussion. So
the Ten Commandments in any language is probably 10 good things to live by, any language, any culture.
Right, yeah, good point. Whether you can live up to them or not. All right, some brief news headlines here, and then we have, one or two emails that relate to naloxone. So we'll read those emails, but we have open phones right now. It's an open phones Friday, so we'll talk about anything you want. 1-800-795-9565. We've got a super fabulous producer on the other side of the glass. I am Mark Lawrence, a subpar performer if there ever was one. Yep, he's over there.
who we got?
It's Rob.
Rob, oh, okay.
Oh, didn't I say his actual name?
Okay. No, I thought maybe Rob Sean Center. Was in, but Rob. Rob's getting, he's probably a little excited for this weekend's Eagles game.
He's always excited for an Eagles game, but he's got a lot on his mind. The computers have a mind of their own at this station, so he's trying to convince them to participate around here.
Good luck.
Right. In the news, tragedy at the Bloomsburg Fairgrounds yesterday, near there anyway, on Route 11. 59-year-old Dean Yeager of Sunbury was killed in a crash that happened around 3 p.m. Full details about who else was hurt in the crash aren't out yet, but County Coroner says that Dean Yeager of Sunbury was in a car that was hit by an oncoming car that had crossed the center line. Over the past few years, the Associated Press reported that an estimated 20,000 overdose deaths were prevented by naloxone injections. Governor Tom Wolf made the drug available for free to all state residents as of yesterday. Most state health centers ran out of the drug. Over 5,000 kits were distributed in the middle portion of the state. 23rd District State Senator Gene Yaw says it's a good idea. He says he's worked on several pieces of legislation to fight the opioid epidemic on other fronts, but recognize that just giving out free naloxone won't be enough.
I don't think that it addresses the real issue, though, that we're dealing with, and that is we need to wake up and treat it like a disease. There's a certain segment of the population that are criminals, but I'm worried about the people who be unintentionally addicted as a result of taking a prescription drug or trying something and not realizing what the effect is going to be once these brain cells are affected in your head.
You can hear the entire conversation with Senator Yaw at WKOK.com. It's on our podcast page. Pennsylvania officials say it was about 5,000 kits in the central portion of the health department's catchment area. As part of the Wolf administration's Stop Overdoses in Pennsylvania, Get Help Now week, the anti-overdose drug is also regularly available at most pharmacies in Pennsylvania. Can reverse overdoses by blocking the opioid's effect on the brain and respiratory system. And we've had a vibrant discussion this week about that, and we'll continue that in a moment. We have two emails that relate to this. And President Donald Trump attacked MSNBC's Mika Brzezinski Thursday because she used a homophobic slur on the air and tweeted that if a conservative person had said it, that person would be banned permanently from television. Quote, this is the president saying, she would probably be given a pass despite their terrible ratings, Trump said. Morning Joe, the show Brzezinski co-hosts with husband Joe Scarborough, regularly has harsh takes on President Trump and his administration. Brzezinski was criticizing Secretary of State Mike Pompeo Thursday for comments regarding the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. She said it sounded like Pompeo was carrying water for a wannabe dictator, and then used a cruder term to describe the intimate nature between the president and Pompeo. Afterwards, she apologized via Twitter, saying it was a, in capital letters, super bad choice of words. MSNBC has no comment. Brzezinski was not on the air Thursday due to a long-planned family matter, said an MSNBC spokesman. Her Pompeo reference, which has drawn social media criticism, was not mentioned on the air by MSNBC.
I'm sure it wasn't. And I'm sure it probably wasn't mentioned by CNN either.
Well, they would probably like this to go away.
I would. There's a number of people that like both her and her husband, Joe Scarborough, to go away, but that's not going to happen, and they should have a voice. But again, this shows the multiple standards within the media for the tolerance or non-tolerance.
Do you know what she said? Do you actually know?
I don't know what she said. I heard about it yesterday, and the person was, I said, I don't even want to hear about it because, you know, it won't be reported.
Yeah, I didn't hear
it. It's the not the double, triple, quadruple.
It's a quintuple standard.
It's the standards. And the other part, too, is it's a show that the ratings are horrendous. Horrendous, but they're surviving on beating up this administration. You look back through and you see the numbers and you see what's reported, and some, you know, criticism is fine, but when you see that 90% to 92% of the coverage of the Trump administration is negative, I mean, that's statistically almost impossible. When you look back at, you know, 80 to 90% of the coverage on the Obama administration on a lot of these networks were positive, which is, again, statistically impossible, you would think. So I'm sure Meek and Joe will have a long weekend and relax and fortunately for some and unfortunately for others, they'll be back on Monday.
Well, actually, she might still be on this long-planned family member. In other words, they're protecting her at the
moment. Well, I think she has a farm in Bucks County, or Lancaster County, that their family and her father was, of course, in the Carter administration. Mm-hmm. He just passed away, I believe, in the last couple of years, and she has siblings that have worked for Republican candidates and Democratic candidates, so a little bit of a split family there, but definitely somewhat in the establishment of politics.
All right, what's your view on Narcan? Should we have distributed it free at health centers yesterday?
Well, I think Senator Yaw talks, in the bigger picture about how you're going to treat drug addiction, but if you're using it, people are using it to get better or to get off. If somebody's,
get off opioids.
Yeah, get off opioids. If somebody's using it just to be able to use opioids, if they have a, an overdose, then, but how do you judge? The opioid addiction's terrible. We see big pharma's role in this. We look at what the Trump administration is trying to do with Big Pharma to roll back some of the scenarios that they have. We have
Look at the role of the medical community, where we came up with a whole new division of evaluation called pain.
Yeah.
Try to make it pain free. Well, look how well that worked out.
Well, pain management is a cottage industry of medicine now, and it started back in the late 80s. How you treat pain. Big Pharma jumped on that, and it was very positive to start with. How you got to treat pain, and then it gets out of control. And when you look at Big Pharma, you see how they can control folks. Interesting about political folks. When political folks have their own means to money, they're not endowed to their donors. When they don't have money, they're endowed to their donors, and we see this from a standpoint that if you can be in the political arena and you can have your moral compass working without the need for the donor's money, you can probably get things done. Once the donors own you, they own you. And we talk about why people give money. Large percentages, 75-80% of people are giving money to political candidates to have some sort of influence. Some want to really influence a political person. Some want to just have a chance to get a return phone call. But once you're endowed to your donors, then good luck on what your political career is going to be. Some people have been very, very, very successful. Others have been compromised.
All right, let's take a quick break. We got to stay on schedule. We got one caller waiting and one coming in and two emails pending. Narcan, we talked about that. Should it be distributed for free? Most folks said no, but some folks said yes. So what's your view on that? And then we have this. Joe McGranahan had an interesting argument that really I thought it was frivolous, but a lot of people hung their hat on it. Well, then life-saving insulin and EpiPens should be available for free then, too. So he was advocating for universal health care. If we're going to give out Narcan, we should pay for everybody's doctor visit. 1-800-795-9565 is our telephone number. 1-800-795-9565 is the Hometown Pharmacy's toll-free line. We invite you to call that. You can also email us at onthemark@wkok.com. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC Way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Welcome back to WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show, On the Mark. We've got two callers waiting, two emails pending. The emails were sent to onthemark@wkok.com. The callers called 1-800-795-9565. Now, you mentioned you're going to read that book next week, you're on vacation. What does a vacationing Ben Reichle do?
Well, with the schedules of some business meetings, my week vacation went back down to Monday and Friday.
Okay.
But,
Hey, duty calls.
Over Thanksgiving, like I said, I read the Grisham book. I recommend that to folks. Sycamore Row.
Okay.
Very interesting. But relaxation, some trips to the YMCA.
Not a hunter.
No, no. So good conversations in the steam room.
Okay.
Yeah, the older gentlemen have a good perspective of life, so they let us younger folks know what's not quite right going on here. But a lot of things are right. So we'll see. But interesting on this. What your feelings on the state giving away Narcan?
Oh, I think it's a good idea. Only because it's a lifesaver.
Yeah.
You know, and I understand everybody's argument. It's expensive. You know, why are we coddling these people? It could lead to more drug abuse. I think all of that is true. But we can't fix any of the dilemmas that individuals have unless they're alive. And if we lose them from an overdose, then you don't get a chance. Let's get your view in a moment. Let's start out with Dale. You're on the mark. Thank you for being patient. I'm glad you didn't get violent while you were waiting on the phone. You're on the mark.
I understand your point of view, passion for life and all like that, but, you know, they're hurting themselves and they're going to hurt their family members. So should we just, you know, I'd say the profiteers, the same people who push the opioids, is behind this Narcan, you know, because, you know, just for them to expedite that without any argument and, you know, go straight up and just, you know, taxpayers are paying for all this, so they're going to oversupply all the police departments and all like that. And I don't know if it's an experiment, but I'd rather put my money towards the seniors who, you know, are harmless and, you know, deserve a break. But, you know, but I say it, this is all relevant to the profiteers, the same people who push the opioids like Tom Marino and all that. Tom Marino didn't even have a challenger, so he's a politician for life. He's getting a subsidized check for the rest of his life. So
I think Tom Marino has put term limits on himself. I think he's...
Well, they did have opposition in the last election.
Yeah, he did have opposition. The professor from
State
College.
He caused a lot of damage, Ben. Ben, you know he caused a lot of damage.
Damage did he cause?
Standing outside the box.
What damage did he cause?
I'm just telling you,
Did he cause?
At a medium perspective, you know, the positive and negative. He worked for the profiteers. And when you work for the profiteers, you succeed. When you work for the Republic, you fail.
Well, Tom Marino was involved in a bill. The bill went to the Senate and got changed. Tom Marino's made his statements on it. You can agree or disagree with him. But when you say damage, what damage was caused?
Well, with him changing the literature on the... proposed opioid prescription for number one painkiller, you know, sold that to the doctor community and all like that, and they didn't even have a vote. They were just told what they're going to do.
Well,
so it tells you that don't have more power than a Republican.
Well, no, I'm saying, yeah, the lobbyists control a lot of things, and if you're indebted to money as a politician, you're there.
Dale,
was what happened on that bill. It went from the House. Now Senator Blackburn was from Tennessee, was involved in the House. Now she's a senator. It went to the Senate, got changed around. Went to back House, Senate, President Obama. Unanimous. he signed it. So if this was a bad bill, every political person has a piece of that bill. Because
Not just Tom Moran.
Yeah. So
right. We'll give you the last word, Dale. Go right ahead. All righty. Paul, you're on the mark. Oop, I got rid of Paul. That was silly. Paul, you're on the mark. You still there, buddy?
Yeah.
I almost sent you into the oblivion.
Well, I was on my way into infinity and the first start to the right.
Okay. It's just the restroom. That's all it is. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, in Peter Pan, it's Never Never Land.
But that's not why you
question. And I'm sure that you guys can give me an answer. And that is, in 50 years of experimenting and researching, I have found that there is only, I think it is 25,000 miles of Earth, either in diameter or circumference. There's 5,280 feet in a mile. The average home covers 28 feet by 40 feet for a family of four. So how much room does Earth have in order to give up to man? Because in the early days of exploration, they found that Samaritan had a civilization that was 113,000 years before Christ. So
Samaria,
in that,
you mean?
That's how much more of people is Earth going to be able to hold before we start to leave it?
Well, it's the question. Oh, I lost it, but Rob encapsulated it as the question of the week, question of the day. So,
in other words, how
question.
Many people is it going to take to cover the Earth before we start to leave it?
Two times as many are on it now. Is that the right answer?
Well, you're close, but I think that it classifies as a proximity.
Okay. All right, we got you. Thank you so much, Paul. Appreciate the call. We're going to take another quickie break. We got two emails related to EpiPens. Let's read them. I keep talking about them, but I never read them. The first one, I like to watch the show Live PD on A&E. Yeah, I watch that sometimes, too. Very compelling. They got multiple police stations being shown live at any given time. Anyway, the network, it's real police on the job, not scripted. Recently, they had a call for a man passed out on the sidewalk. They ended up giving him Narcan and having an ambulance take him to the hospital. Later, the host of the show reported it was the third such episode for that guy this past week. I guess they never learn, says Dave. And Joe kept going throughout the week the discussion that if you're going to give away free Narcan, you should give away EpiPens because life-threatening allergies are also rampant, and so are diabetics who don't have insulin, and so they're, you know, dying left and right because of allergies or diabetes, and so we should give out EpiPens and insulin shots as well. To that end, one of our listeners recalled what we did talk a little bit about last week, and that's that the drugstore chain CVS announced last January of 2017 that it will sell a generic version of adrenaline for $109 per two-pack, down from $200, which is the price of an EpiPen, the EpiPen two-pack. You got to buy two at a time. Half of them expire before they ever get used anyway, which I guess is probably fortunate, right? Because you're using it in an emergent situation. 1-800-795-9565. Please call us now. Your view on the free naloxone. 1-800-795-9565.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC Way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC Way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Welcome back to the KOK Live telephone talk show on the mark. Mark Lawrence here. Two callers waiting. Pardon me?
The music, we were done.
Yeah, not quite yet. Nope, I'm pushing all the wrong buttons here. Joe, you're on the mark. Thanks for being patient. Go right ahead.
Yeah, quickly, I'm back for my minute. Yesterday, you and Cindy, I think, were talking about the middleman that raises the prices on these drugs. I'd like some information or what that's about, if I could just read up on it. I find that interesting.
The middleman.
You recall that.
These managers.
It was brief, and it really caught my attention. I'd like to, you know, because
they're drug managers, the governor, or the DePasquale, is all up in arms about them.
So they're drug managers. I mean, if I just, like, type in a word and something
Eugene
like
that. Eugene DePasquale, prescription managers.
Oh, okay.
He had a news conference this week. That was if you just look Eugene DePasquale, if you could look him up, it was one of his news conferences this week. I think it was this week. And they're like middle managers. They have a much fancier title than that.
Okay. What were these? Are these the wholesalers and to distributors, or is these governmental folks?
They're like insurance
providers. I mean, I don't
want
to take up any more time, but just as long as I get some word. And secondly, quickly. For Jeff Mann, buy your own books. Don't pass one around. Just kidding.
Oh, yeah. I agree. I sound so chintzy doing that. You're right. That's it. My wife texted me.
Levity, have a good weekend, man.
Thank you. Yeah, my lovely bride texted me and said, I'll buy you a book. Don't steal the professor's book.
It was a gift. Yeah, that's what you do. If you're promoting something, you bring samples in.
Out.
Yeah.
Let's see. Chris, thank you so much for waiting, sir. You're on the mark.
Yeah, first of all, having money is no guarantee of either lack of corruption or ability to not be indebted to lobbyists, especially depending on how cheap you are in the first place.
No, but it gives you options. If you don't have to, if you have the options to be independent,
but you could be just
corrupt
or even more corrupt.
No, you could be.
You have more ability to make money off your decisions you're making,
and
reward your friends.
And you
too.
can be less corrupt because you don't need
you
to be endowed.
You can be, but not always.
Chris, then it's 50-50. You can be more corrupt or you can be less corrupt. It's 50-50, so you don't know it, and I don't know it. So we'll say it's 50-50.
Well, let's say I believe Sanders is less corrupt than President Trump.
That's your opinion.
and less under the influence of lobbyists. Now, about Marino.
No, that's not true
one
at all.
One thing about Marino
Sanders is under
the guy in his office
who wrote the bill.
Got a plum job after the bill got passed with the company that had him, the people who had him writing it. And that shows you they got what they want.
Yeah, and the bill got changed in the Senate, but they still
they
got what they
what
want.
They got what they want. They wanted something they could
Chris,
change, Ben.
The bill got
that
changed.
That was just a vehicle.
Okay,
they
Chris.
They got what they want. Yeah, and they used Marino like a sour sponge.
Well, but you're lack of some total understanding here, but here's what happened.
And also, one thing I did want to get in, since I don't have much time, is that correct?
No, you.
I hope not.
We have 3 minutes. Go right
ahead.
Please enlighten us on this Friday.
Oh, well, there is a guy who did say, I can't remember who it was, that you are not much of a politician if you can't drink their whiskey, bleep their women, take their money and vote against them the next day.
No, well, there might be something to that.
The
scenario about that bill, if people look back at it, it was unanimous and signed by the president. So, and that was President Obama at that time. So everybody involved in that
is negligent.
There. So,
yes.
Well,
everybody
then everybody.
But
Chris,
were you.
Chris, look
Marino
at the look,
was you.
Okay, look at the statistics and how many laws get passed that way, and it's very,
exactly.
very small. So that means everybody in that Congress was involved in that, and it goes
like
right to the White House.
Bill that got passed. Just like the tax bill that Trump got passed, things got in favoring the real estate dealers in big places, and he just signed a bill about it that rewards his family quite handsomely. He ordered a presidential order saying what opportunity places.
Well, that's for developers, and that's when legislation gets made like that. There's going to be some pluses, and there's probably going to be some that. But that tax bill, remember,
he promised a bill that wouldn't benefit him or his family or his rich friends, didn't he? That was part of his promise.
Did he promise that?
In a campaign, yes, he did.
Okay. So he broke a campaign promise and he lied both. Not President Trump. Come on now. He's the liar in chief.
The tax bill has greased the wheels for the economy. We see the results of that. Some folks are going to have advantages.
Yes,
some folks
yes.
are.
We've
but for
the
most part, well,
yes,
for the most part,
well,
Chris, and you've
yes,
probably
you're
seen,
correct.
And you've probably have seen what the revenues are for the federal government and the state
and
of Pennsylvania.
Yes, and we've seen
look
the debt go way spiraling out of control, haven't we?
Look
up 50%, I believe.
Yeah, and as we say, we don't have a tax problem
up
in the state of Pennsylvania, and we don't have a
the
tax
deficit.
And we don't that hasn't been up 50%, Chris.
Yes, it has been. Yes, it has been. You checked.
And you look at the revenues that the state.
I looked at it just three days ago.
The state's brought in, and look at the revenue that we have a spending problem. We don't have a tax problem.
Why don't you fix the spending? Because you haven't fixed the other half.
Oh, my
gosh.
You've
made it worse.
Chris, what station is this?
What
station is this?
What station is what?
WKOK Sunbury.
Oh, it's WMLP.